This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is the part about Shedeur Sanders, and I want to talk to Bink about it, but just I don't want to do it yet. C-Dot, Shedeur was definitely a first-round pick. When the Mannings or Elways dictated what teams they were going to play for, it was cricket. What makes it different now? Shedeur Sanders is not Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, or John Elway as a prospect. He's not. I don't know why we live in this world, and we know that some people get treated differently because of their abilities. I don't know why we try to... Because he's better than you are. He's more special than you are. There's some players that if that tape had come out when Tyreek Hill got the tape, the Chiefs would have cut him instantly. We're not cutting Tyreek Hill instantly. There's some players on the Chiefs that can't get a DUI. If Patrick Mahomes got a DUI, I'm guessing they're not releasing him if that happens. I'm going to guess that's the case. So if you're asking, well, what makes Shedeur different than Peyton Manning? He ain't Peyton Manning. Yes, Peyton Manning could tank some interviews. He was still going to go top five in the draft. Shedeur, when you're a mid-level prospect, you should be on your best behavior. You weren't.
He just went out and got Drew Rosenhaus as agent today, didn't he? I think he just went out and hired him as his agent. Boy, that'll be a fun combination.
All right, Bing, let's start with this. Now, I have not heard this. Rob told me this. Rob told me you do not like the Chiefs draft class. Is that true?
No,
accurate?
It's not true.
Okay, I'm just telling you what I heard. I didn't hear it.
I don't like the first pick. I like day two and day three.
Okay.
A lot. A lot of these players I liked. Day one, not so much. Day two and three, I did.
All right, let's start with day two then, because we talked to you a little bit about Simmons, and we can obviously double back on Simmons. What do you like about their day two selections? They went out and they really loaded up on defense. They got two defensive linemen, and they also picked up a corner.
Yeah, I mean, would I like to see them go offensive heavy? Yes. But these actual players they got on defense are actually very good. Omar Norman Lott's very interesting. Just played a rotation when he was at Tennessee, but a great pass rusher, like 18.9% win rate. I mean, the guy can get there even on his limited snaps, 129 snaps in pass protection. Ashton Gelati is very interesting. This guy is a lot like George Karloftis in how he goes. And it's just not me saying it or somebody writing about it. His actual head coach that joined us this weekend, Jeff Brom, who played in the NFL, who coached both Karloftis at Purdue, then he went to Louisville, and he made that comparison with that. Matter of fact, they've been in contact with each other even before he was drafted as far as Karloftis and Gelati. He led the nation in pressures. So you see a theme here. So you have the highest win rate with Norman Lott. You see Gelati, the most pressures in college football. So you see like a theme of what the Chiefs were doing. Listen, they were 18th in sacks last year. They were number two in sacks the two previous years that they won a Super Bowl. Didn't win this year, slipped to 18th. They want to get after the quarterback. It's extremely important. And Noel Williams, the cornerback out of California, absolutely love this pick from the Chiefs. This guy that can start with them for day one.
I'll be the pessimist here. We know how the draft works. Norman Lott and Gelati, they both don't work. One of those guys misses. That's kind of how the draft works.
It's how it works.
You take two swings, and you're hoping that one of those guys turns out to be a potential starter for you guys.
I will say this. With Norman Lott, which you hope you have like Mike Dana type of success, just a guy that comes in here that no one's expecting anything. Don't forget when Mike Dana was at Central Michigan, very highly regarded player. He transferred to Michigan. Wasn't even invited to the combine, but the Chiefs still threw a dart at him in the draft and turned out to be good, a good pick for him. Gelati's got the Felix better watch out because this guy I can see getting a lot more playing time than Felix on the defensive line getting to the quarterback. I actually like their day two picks. I can actually see all three of these guys playing significant roles.
I mean, there's no Felix.
Not starting except for Noel Williams.
There's no Felix needs to watch out. If a third-round draft pick takes Felix's job as he is heading into year three after you have been given multiple redshirt years, there is no watch out. You're not an NFL player.
Maybe not, but I think certainly that Gelati's a better player at that perspective than Felix at this point, to be honest with you. So, yes, I think this guy will borrow some playing time from Felix.
I think it's kind of clear that the Chiefs just have a type. Like, if you look at Jalen Royals, and I want to get to him more extensively in a bit, like, he fits the kind of receiver that they like. We're going to play the scout audio.
Sure.
Where he says, he reminds me of Rashee Rice. Well, we know that's a kind of build, a kind of style of receiver that they like. When I look at Noel Williams, I mean, this is the kind of receiver that they have just had a lot of success with. And what really excites me about this pick is I look at the depth that they have now in that room and how young they all are. You got Trent McDuffie. You pick up Christian Fulton. You add Williams. You got Joshua Williams. You got Jalen Watson. Like, you got six or seven really strong options at corner where, of all the rooms in their building, this is the one that I think could handle some attrition where an injury happens, and they should be able to maintain a really high level.
Yeah, I mean, they could go ahead and get Jalen Watson in the seventh round. Here's the third round of Noel Williams. Keep this in mind, too, about Noel. He led college football in interceptions last year. He actually picked off Cam Ward in a game when Cal played Miami this year. He had 9 pass breakups, tied for third in FBS. I mean, he's very good around the ball, but he's an extremely good tackler. He comes up and makes hits. Not afraid that he had an 80-yard kickoff return, too. So they got several guys in this class that can return kicks. And I know that was important for the Chiefs because they mentioned it several times when the guy can return kicks because teams are loading up now because the ball is going to be spotted at 35. And even the return rate did go up last year with the new kickoff rules, which I do hate, but they will be moving it back to the 35-yard line. But Noel Williams, I really like it. All these guys have that toughness factor about them, but again, they all led the nation in something. Like, that means something to them. And I love Noel Williams' coach, Kevin Wilcox, that joined us, or Justin Wilcox, and he's a former defensive coordinator in college football and head coach at Cal. He said, hey, there's two categories of football players, and this stuff means something. He goes, those are the guys that want to be a football player, like being a football player, I mean, and those that want to play the sport of football. Meaning, there's a bunch of guys that, hey, man, they like everything that comes with being a football player, right? Get you some money, get you attention. And then there's the guys like this that go to work. They're all about business, and they just love the sport of football. And I thought that was pretty interesting when he said that.
That's how I feel about Shadur. Do you want to be a football player, or do you want to be famous?
No, I agree with you to some extent, because that's one good question, and that's why that's become such a prevalent question when it comes to college football players. How much do you actually like playing, or do you just like the sport? Do you like just being famous? Do you like everything that comes about it, or are you that type of guy? Let me play this for you, just 20 seconds. This is the head coach of Cal about Noel Williams. I thought this was very interesting what he said.
There's two categories, you know. There's guys that love being a football player and guys that love playing football. He's a guy that loves playing football, whether it's one-on-ones or seven-on-seven, you know, Tuesday practice. And
see, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's a head coach. He's been a defensive coordinator at Wisconsin, at Tennessee, at USC, and, of course, he's been the head coach at Cal. But that was interesting because that's true. I mean, I think we can look at players and say, is he just like being a football player, or does he actually like playing football?
Do you think that Jalen Royals is going to help them this year? Because I do like this pick, but I'm just thinking about best case scenario if everything works out. Now, I understand building for depth. An injury is going to happen. You want to have somebody that can step in. But I would say they drafted 3 offensive players. I think there is a world in which none of those 3 players are major contributors for the Chiefs this upcoming season. Simmons might be a backup all year, break in case of emergency. Royals might be their 4th or their 5th wide receiver for this year. Smith might be, what, their 3rd or 4th running back this year. Like, there is a chance that all 3 of their offensive picks are more for 26 or 27 than they are for helping them in this upcoming season. Is there a world in which Royals is a major contributor this year that is not centered around injuries happening?
It would be injuries. It would be, like you said, without injuries happening. Because last year would have been needed when Hollywood Brown goes out for the year, basically, till the very end, when he gets hurt in preseason snap 1 against, or his play 1 against Jacksonville. And then when Shea Rice gets hurt against Los Angeles, all of a sudden Xavier Worthy had to step up. And it was kind of a luxury how Worthy was drafted. Yeah, first rounder, but you got Hollywood Brown on the team. It's a very similar skill set. And Rashee Rice is here. You remember, he was having trouble, like, catching the ball on the sidelines, like, knowing time and space placement where he was on the field. And things started to change. You know, he became more acclimated. He became the Chiefs' leading receiver through the postseason. Like, when Sky Moore was drafted, I believe there was some pressure on him, some pressure to come in because it was their one dart that they threw that night to get him. The next year, the only offensive guys they went was that Friday night when they drafted in Kansas City, when they got Rashee Rice and Wandae Morris. And I felt there was a little bit of pressure on Rice to step up and be that guy. And he delivered 2nd most catches of any rookie wide receiver in yards and receptions.
I don't think Royals has a lot of pressure this year.
I don't at all. I don't know. That's kind of why I like where you're sitting, because you're sitting right now as the fourth. I mean, you're battling Juju for playing time at this point because you know Worthy's getting his snaps. You're not taking his. You're not taking Rice. You're not, well, if there's a suspension or something that happens, I mean, there could be a lot more playing time for guys like Royals, which this is why you draft these guys. So you have somebody come in and he can return the ball as well, which is, I think is important. I love this pick for the Chiefs. I'm glad they finally did it because I'm sitting here going, okay, where's receiver? Where's running back? I mean, I love these other players they got on defense. I mean, they got some really quality guys, but you get Patrick Mahomes once. Like in these guys' lifetime, Veach and these guys, their careers, he's there to have a quarterback like that once. This is it. This is it. They're never going to have another quarterback that goes out and has three Super Bowl rings and been in the AFC title game every year as a starter. That will never happen again, at least to them.
I think the Chiefs' message that they clearly sent this offseason was, we were going to be really good offensively last year, but injuries derailed us. If you look at how they moved this offseason at running back, they added Elijah Mitchell, who has been hurt for a large majority of his career, and you spent the 223rd pick on a running back. So you did not spend significant investment to improve that room. When you think about wide receiver, you brought back your own wide receivers. You spent the 123rd pick on a wide receiver this year. The Chiefs' entire offseason kind of had a theme of running back, bringing back Trey Smith, bringing back Nick Bolton, bringing around some of your offensive pieces. I also think their draft kind of mirror that same thing. We don't think we need immediate day one help at really anything on offense. We are thinking more for the future. And if we get something from these guys, great. But we are not dependent on getting contribution from any of these players.
I mean, I think they're counting on the health of players, to be honest with you, because you look at this team, they weren't explosive offensively. They weren't. They had a ton of one-score games. What's really changed? Like, what's really changed on this offense? It's the same cast of characters, right? Except Jalen Rollins being thrown in there, some Rashard Smith at times. But it's essentially the same team. This is the same team that struggled putting points up on the board and putting teams away. But you remember the St. Joe Chiefs. That was the fun Chiefs. They were airing it out, touchdown, long bombs, the Worthy and Brown and Rasheed Rice. They were doing all this. And then all of a sudden these injuries happen, and they're caught in a situation where they had to pivot and become a different, you know, a ball-control football team from what they wanted to be. But it's essentially a lot of the same cast of characters, including the offensive line. They may have taken a hit when Joe Tooney leaves and goes to Chicago for what you're going to do on the left side of your line, but it's essentially the same group of players. You're expecting a different outcome from the same group of players. That's why I was kind of hoping they'd go more explosive.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the Chiefs maybe have two philosophies that they communicated to us. We just mentioned the first one. We think we had enough in skill position players last year. Injuries just happened. We want to get an opportunity to see what a healthy offense looks like with Rice, Worthy, Hollywood Brown, and the running backs. Also, I mean, it is clear the Chiefs are taking a gamble. We think that having Jalen Smith and Kingsley Suamataia, or Jalen Moore, excuse me, we think that Jalen Moore and Kingsley Suamataia, we think that gives us a better chance than having Joe Tooney play left tackle and having Mike Caliendo play left guard. Because other than that, I mean, the offensive line they had in the Super Bowl from left guard to right tackle is the exact same as it was last year. They have just moved the pieces around on the other side.
And the left side, the most important side, you're dealing with a guy that was a former fifth-round pick from Western Michigan, a Sky Moore teammate, Jalen Moore, that has five NFL starts. And your other option is left tackle you just drafted, who has a patellar knee injury that may or may not even play this year. Looks like he probably will, but what kind of effect are you going to get? And then you're taking a guy that bummed out at left tackle and you're going to put him in left guard. So, yeah, that's some consistency issues you're worrying about. Then you say, all right, where else can we get better? Can we get more explosive? Well, you drafted a receiver, yes, but it was in the fourth round. And right now it's the fourth guy on your depth chart. You didn't grab anybody that's one, two, or three. They're not pushing. He's not pushing any of those guys out.
Right now we got Jay Binkley in studio going through the Chiefs draft. I really thought when they drafted the linebacker at 156, I thought that was the time to go running back. You had addressed a majority of your needs at that point, and I thought they were going to be looking for, hey, this is where you go get Devin Neal. This is where you go get DJ Giddens. This is where you go get a Damian Martinez. I was a little surprised that they took a linebacker there and didn't have another pick until 228 when they went to go pick up a running back. I have been kind of banging the drum this entire offseason that there wasn't enough in that room, that they needed to make more investment in the room. I mean, they told us that they don't feel that way. They feel like they got enough in that room. They feel like there's enough there. Do you agree with how they handled running back this offseason?
Well, especially we played the clips on this weekend. It's like, hey, what did V say? We will have a running back probably on the roster from this draft. Like, we're going to have that. I was like, okay, where are they getting him? And luckily, the Patriots keep doing business with the Chiefs. Like, this has been, they've been a major trade partner. That's why Trent McDuffie is a Chief, because of the Patriots trading. So I think the Chiefs will look at it and say, all right, they're picking two picks at the end of the seventh round, including the last pick in the draft. You know what? Rashard's still there. Let's go out and get him. We kind of like him. We kind of like him in that Jet McKinnon type ilk. Maybe we'll move up and get him. They got lucky because sixth round, Taj Brooks goes. He's the all-time leading rusher at Texas Tech. That might have been a guy that they would have been looking at in the sixth round. But yeah, I mean, it's deep. You know, in other years, Bouchard's probably drafted a lot higher, to be honest with you. He's probably a fourth or fifth round pick in other drafts, maybe fourth round, but it was just so deep at the running back class. But yeah, they got to the seventh round, and I think they said, okay, what are we going to do now? What are we going to do now? All the great running backs are off the board except for Bouchard and Smith. We better find a way to get him.
Right now,
your owner went to SMU.
Right now, we got Binkley in studio. Binkley, I want to get your thoughts on Shedeur Sanders. I've never asked you this. What do you make of him as a prospect? Are you a fan of his? Where are you at on Shedeur?
Well, he helped turn that team around. I mean, he did. It just wasn't Deion doing it. It was him doing it. Needs to be humbled. I mean, the ego and stuff like that's out of control, but that's out of control for a lot of players. But the problem is guys have to like playing for you. Like, players have to like their quarterback, right? Which I think they like him, but focus on the football aspect of the things. And there's a lot of things with his dad, whether he's going to troll where he went and how you you shouldn't sandbag interviews, which, you know,
I think he sandbagged multiple interviews.
He showed up at the combine, he's placed, but he didn't do anything. He just stood up and, you know, shook everybody's hand like you're a superstar, and you're not, because you didn't do anything. And I'm with you on that. He should have done some things. He's not Austin Jente, who didn't run at the combine, didn't run his pro day, didn't have to. He's going to pick six. Big difference. I will say this about Shedeur, though. There's some football type stuff that you have to like about the kid. He delivered. He was sacked 152 times, did not have a running game at Colorado. His offensive line was in shambles, but he proved toughness, which is a real hard thing for quarterbacks sometimes to do. He didn't leave the game. He didn't tap out like Anthony Richardson. He didn't do any of that. He stayed in the game, took his hits. He was hit a ton of times, and he still delivered. Like, he didn't, hey, I'm not playing this game. No, he didn't, and he turned Colorado. Colorado became more of a viable football team than they had been in the past. He's a big part of that. It's just you got to change kind of the perception. They should have got a PR coach or something to kind of help him out. Hey, you know, guys don't want to hear your rap music after games, Shedeur. You know, they want to hear other music. They don't want to hear Shedeur in his music in the post game. There's just things like that, because you need the players that want to play with you. You need them to like you. Patrick Mahomes is like the perfect example, man. I can't think of a guy that's a superstar, does the things he does. Goes to dinner with these dudes. He shows up with guys at wrestling events, or he brings them to the box at soccer matches or whatever. He plays video games with players, brings them down to Texas. They're not superstars that are down there at Camp Pat. He brings anybody and everybody down. He treats everybody the same, and that's why players want to play for him. Like, that's the one intangible quarterbacks have to have, and I don't think he has that.
I think a big thing with Shedeur was going to be this. I think it's clear the NFL did not view him as a starting quarterback. If they viewed him as a starting quarterback, they would put up with a lot more than bad interviews. If you don't see him as an immediate starter for you, can he survive in a system that's not about him? You think about high school, both colleges, Jackson State and Colorado, you have been the center of everything there. Your dad's been the coach your entire time. That's not how it's going to be there. And you're also going to be now the most famous backup quarterback in the National Football
League. Drew Rosenhaus. Now, I'm just curious how he's going to deal with life after Deion. Like, how's that going to be any different, not having Deion around? You know, Cleveland, they could have had a situation where they had Travis Hunter still, but they traded those picks away. Could have had Travis Hunter and Shedeur. But I do think he went to kind of a good place for him when you're battling out with Kenny Pickett and Dylan Gabriel and Joe Flacco. Like, there could actually be some playing time for him. But the players have to buy into who and what you are.
I was going to say, that's the pretty crazy part.
That's the hard part.
That's the crazy part, I think, about all of this is, in the end, I think he got drafted to the right place.
I think so, too. I think Cleveland was the perfect spot for him.
It does not matter where you got drafted. You were in a room now with Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, and Dylan Gabriel. You will be given every opportunity in the world to go win that job.
Yep.
Go be better than those other three quarterbacks, and maybe you don't get that opportunity day one. But we all know how this works. Cleveland's not making the playoffs.
Flacco's going to start. They're going to start off 0-4, 1-5, and then boom, they're going to say, you know, let's look for the future.
Shedeur,
we'll see what you – it's between you and Dylan. Maybe Kenny Pickett on that. Well, we want to go future. We'll see what you got, Shedeur. That's what's going to happen.
100%. Shedeur Sanders will get an opportunity to start in the National
Football League. It's a blessing for him to go there.
I think it's the best possible landing spot for him.
Yep.
You got a quarterback-minded head coach in Kevin Stefanski, and you're going to get an opportunity to start later in the season. Now the real work starts.
And a running game. You know, he's never had that, so at least he's got the running game to go with it.
Right now, we got Jay Binkley joining us in studio. If you had to give out a draft grade for the Chiefs, what would you give?
I said B-plus the other night when Drew texted me. Obviously, not wild about the first round. Things can change. I mean, if Simmons ends up panning out and is an all-pro type player, it's an A. I think draft grades are way too early when to give them out. I mean, just go back to 2017 when Mahomes drafted. It's like C-plus, C, stuff like that. It's clearly, you know, much better than that. A lot of these players they got, though, were way under drafted. Like 156 or Bossa goes when Dayton Brugler and stuff happens to them, a top 100 player. They've got some dogs, man. They've got some really good players in their draft classes. Maybe different philosophy. Maybe Rashard Davis or Smith pans out for the Chiefs. We'll see. I mean, the guy was a receiver at Miami. Low mileage on the body running the football because they turned him into a running back at SMU. He had been a wide receiver, so he obviously can catch the football, which he did at SMU. We'll see if that pans out. There's some of these guys, if they pan out or not, if they deliver or not. Like looking back at 2022, and you're looking at Pacheco and Jalen Watson and Najee Johnson, the seventh round, you go, man, this is a great draft, which it was. It was given an A at the time. You know, it's an A now when you look back at that draft class. I'm not wild about giving out grades. B-plus is what I said.
I look at their draft class, and a lot of it is just centered around how good Joshua Simmons turns out to be. Let me ask you this.
That's the big one.
Let's say that Simmons turns out to be Juwan Taylor. He plays his rookie contract with the team that drafted him, and he eventually goes on to leave for more money. How will you view that pick? Because Juwan Taylor, I mean, he was good enough to get a significant contract from his second team, but obviously Jacksonville saw something that didn't want to make them sign up long-term and give him that contract. But, I mean, Juwan Taylor has been a consistent starter in the league. He's been healthy in the league. Like, Juwan Taylor has been a good draft pick. If that's what Simmons turns out to be, how do you feel about that pick?
I think it's very average at best. I don't think it's above average. It's just average. Average type pick. So the penalties definitely are a bad mark on him, leading the NFL in penalties the last 2 years. But the hope would probably be Simmons needs to – I mean, the Pro Bowl is easy to get to. You at least got to get to that.
Especially if you play on a prominent team like
if you're Kansas an all-pro, even better. You know, Chiefs did buy into it. He went to his pro day, had all of a sudden 34-inch arms. They measured him at the combine. They were 33. Andy Reid's never drafted somebody less than 34. So all of a sudden, those arms grew. This happened to Will Campbell. His arms grew an inch. Jalen Milroe's hands grew half an inch from the combine to the deal. So they need more standard testing, to be honest with you. But that this draft, the grade dictates how Simmons finishes, to be honest with you. It could be great. It could be not so great, depending on how Simmons does.
That is our guy, Jay Binkley, joining us in studio to take a closer look at the Chiefs draft. Bink, man, I appreciate you.
Thank you, Dot.
Absolutely. Coming up on the other side, Mel Kiper had a long weekend. We'll discuss it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Your home for the best food takes in KC.
Regular old American nachos. You know, I don't need jalapenos with mine. Just chips, cheese.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5 The Fan.
All right. Let's talk about Mel Kiper. Now, I have all the respect in the world for Mel Kiper. There are certain people who are associated with the thing that we love. When you think of the NFL, I hear John Madden and Pat Summerall's voice. When you think of college basketball, Dick Vitale, Bill Raftery, college football, you think of Lee Corso. There are certain people who have been very synonymous with their thing. The NFL draft is Mel Kiper's thing. One of the reasons that the draft has grown into the business that it is because of Mel Kiper. One of the reasons that people have 3-round mocks and 5-round mocks is because of Mel Kiper. He founded all of this draft prognostication. He is the OG godfather at this thing. We have to be honest about what Mel Kiper's job is. It is predicting the future. That's really hard to do. It is, I like this player. I think he's a chance to be a good pro. I don't like this player. I don't think he has a chance to be a good pro. That's all he does. He doesn't predict games. All we know Mel Kiper for is telling you how the future is going to go. Well, there have been some players that he has attached his reputation to. One of those players is Jimmy Clausen. He was hell-bent that Jimmy Clausen was going to be a good quarterback. He was not. I don't think people are acknowledging this about Kiper and how he handled the draft. There are only two things that can be true. Mel Kiper had Shedeur Sanders as the number five player on his board and number one quarterback. As you were watching ESPN coverage and they continue to show you Mel's vest available, there has been one player that has been on there for 2.5 days. Other players are going off the board and that player is just sitting there the entire time. So it poses the question, are you full of it or are they? Both of you cannot be right. You have him as one of the best players in this draft class. The NFL is telling you you're dead wrong about this. And if your job is to be right, if your job is to predict the future, if your job is to tell us what, I understand how that makes you a little bit mad as you are having to answer these questions about how could you be so wrong about a player?
But Mel, the draft has spoken.
That's right. That's the key, Mel. It's not putting a value judgment on whether those who passed are right or wrong. They did.
Yep.
So now, whenever you're in circumstances in life, whether you like them, whether you don't like them, whether they're fair or whether they're unfair, you might have to deal with them.
That's
and
right.
Now Shedeur Sanders has to deal with
everything.
And for whatever reason, whether he played a minute, microscopic percentage, 0%, or it's a legitimate criticism of the way he conducted himself during the draft process, this was the result.
Yeah.
Now he has an opportunity to answer it. I think yelling at the NFL about it is not
right. There's not a quarterback. Boomer Esiason was not happy when he was the second round pick.
Tom Brady was not happy.
They dropped. How'd they turn out?
And you know what? Nobody's arguing that can happen.
Reese, the NFL has been clueless for 50 years when it comes to evaluating quarterback. Clueless.
They have no idea
what they're doing in terms of evaluating quarterback. That's proof. There's proof of that.
I don't disagree with Mel a whole lot on that thing. I don't know if Mel's the right person to give that message, but I don't disagree that much with him. I understand why Kiper had the weekend that he had. I do. I get it. I also think that disagreeing is healthy. It's part of sports dialogue. I get why Mel feels the way. This is my livelihood. This is what I do for a living. I get it. Ultimately, we will find out who's right. On one side, the NFL told you, hey, we don't think that he's a starter, and we also don't know if he is worth putting up with all the nonsense that comes with him. We're going to have to say no here. Kiper is telling you the talent is there. Kiper had him as his number one quarterback on the board. I think he's the best quarterback in this year's draft class. History will tell us who's right. That's the beauty of the draft. All of us try to be Mel Kiper. We all think, well, I watch a lot of college football. I watch the NFL. I think I can tell you who's going to be a good pro. We all wear that as a badge of honor. That's not everybody's job. That's Kiper's job. I thought it was great television. I thought it was great theater. It was the story of the draft. This draft is not about Cam Ward. This draft is not about Travis Hunter. This draft is not about Jackson Dart being drafted in round one. This draft is about how we all were so wrong on Shedeur. Even if you're somebody who's not high on Shedeur, you didn't see him as a fourth round pick. I mean, I had kind of leveled that he was going to be a second round pick. All right, hey, he's not going to be round one, but there's enough talent there. He's going to be selected on day two. He'll go early. He didn't go in day two. In fact, he sat two whole nights watching the draft and then went on Saturday. The NFL people said, we think Jalen Milroe is better than you. We think that Dylan Gabriel is better than you. We think that Tyler Shuck kid is better than you. And that man is 30. They told you a lot of these other guys are better than you. This is the beautiful thing about sports. This is deep down is what we all love about sports. Eventually, all your questions about a team or a player get answered. If you think a team is in the postseason because of their schedule, the Broncos aren't that good. Oh, they've been beaten up on. Well, you know what? Eventually, you can only run and hide for so long. Eventually, you got to play another good team. You got to play other Super Bowl contending teams. And that will ultimately answer our question on whether or not you're the best. If you think you're really fast, well, they have a competition once every 4 years to determine how fast you really think you are. If you think you're the best swimmer or whatever you think you're the best at, there is usually a competition to prove how good you are. If Shedeur is good, now's the time to prove it. It's not in the selection process. It's in the, you're on a team now. They're paying you millions of dollars to go out there and perform. Be better than those guys next to you. And eventually they'll put you in the game. And we'll see if Shedeur can be an NFL quarterback or not. So I'm really excited to see how this process turns out with Shedeur. It's one of the most interesting storylines in the National Football League. Another interesting storyline, Bill Belichick. Now, I would think that the message over the last couple of weeks is that them young girls are going to get you in trouble. But obviously, older, powerful men are not listening to the message. Bill Belichick went on 60 Minutes and did an interview. He was asked a question. His girlfriend determined he couldn't answer that question.
The other change for Belichick is 24-year-old Jordan Hudson, his creative muse, as he writes in his book.
Make sure that that's
good. Jordan was a constant presence during our interview.
You have Jordan right over there. Everybody in the world seems to be following this relationship. They've got an opinion about your private life. It's got nothing to do with them, but they're invested in it. How do you deal with that?
Never been too worried about what everybody else thinks. Just try to do what I feel like is best for me and what's right.
How did you guys meet?
Not talking about this.
No?
No.
Bill, it's got to be tough. It's got to be tough to be sleeping with your publicist. It's got to be tough to be sleeping with your PR director. It's got to be tough to be sleeping with your SID. She's too involved in your life. She's too involved. She makes all the decisions. Is she your girlfriend? Is she your PR person? Is she your handler? What is her role in your life? Because it sounds to me like she has come in and she has taken over and she is determined, I'm going to do it all. You remember when you were a kid, I'm sure you wanted this. There used to be that toy that it could be like an air hockey machine. It could be a foosball table and you could play pool. You could get 3-in-1 Fisher Price, $100. Oh my goodness. It was a magical Christmas if you got one of those. Bill Belichick married one of those. She decided I'm going to be all of it. I'm going to be the foosball table, the pool table, and the air hockey table. Bill, good luck, man. That's all I got to say. Good luck. He called that woman a creative muse, is what he called her. Bill was so unhappy in that last relationship. I know he was. Bill was unhappy. Walking around with his hoodies all cut up, frowning mad all the time. This young girl sat him down, and they watched New Girl on Netflix, changed his life. Bill is smiling in ways. Bill Belichick has been in our lives 40, 50 years. I've never seen him smile. That man's smiling from ear to ear now. She changed that man's life. Whatever she got, I don't want none of it. I don't want it. She got a spell on Bill Belichick. Free him. Free Bill. I'm telling you, it's some powerful sorcery at work that she got on Bill. Oh, we're not answering that. We ain't interviewing you. We're interviewing him. I didn't ask you to be here. Bill, good luck, man. Keep your head up. That's all I got to say. Keep your head up. Coming up on the other side, we'll get back to the Chiefs draft. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, coming up at the top of the hour, Nate Taylor is going to join us on the show. We'll get his reaction to the Chiefs draft. All right, let's hear from their director of player personnel. Here he is talking about the wide receiver they got in the fourth round, Jalen Royals.
He, when I say he's like Rasheed, he's got big hands, strong hands, and he's very good after the catch. And you saw him downfield, too, on some of those clips. I'm sure you saw. I mean, the kid had, 50-plus touchdowns in 2023. He was on record, or he was on pace in 2024 to kind of smash the 2023 production before he got injured. So we thought Rack is a big, it's a big part of our offense. It's something we look for in receivers. I mean, we look for speed. The kid had that 4.40. We look for strength. He has that, and he's got Rack, and we look for route running. And that's probably an area where Rashid had to kind of develop a little bit. So we kind of thought they were similar in that respect. But he came on the scene. We watched his tape before the Senior Bowl. Brett will kind of pick guys that you pick and choose, and we're like, hey, this guy's kind of interesting. Then he goes to the Senior Bowl, and we thought he did well. So he got it, you know, he got even more on the radar. Then he goes to the combine, he runs a 4.40. You know what I mean? And he jumps to 36, and we're like, oh, this kid's explosive. And then you get the kind of coaches involved, and we zoom them and we talk, and we're like, yeah, we could use this kid. And with Rashid coming back from injury and trying to get right, the hopes are, you know, this kid can step in and try to get some playing time and help us out.
I don't have anything critical to say about them drafting Jalen Royals. I'm reading his NFL draft prospect grade on NFL.com if you want to check it out. It all checks out very well. At the combine, he ranked 8th in production. In athleticism, he ranked 11th. Total score, he was the 6th best wide receiver that went to the combine. They see his prospect grade as someone who can eventually become a starter. I then look at some of his strengths, weaknesses, what they think he can do. Sounds like a Chiefs receiver. And to get that player in the 4th round, to get that player with the 133rd overall pick, I mean, that sounds good to me. I don't have much complaint about the Jalen Royals selection. I don't really know how you could. He sounds like your prototypical mid-round draft pick. We like a lot of his skill sets. He reminds us of a player that we already have, a player that we've already had a lot of success with. We're going to allow him the opportunity to develop and see if he can help us. They don't need Jalen Royals this year if they stay healthy. You've got Rashee Rice. You got Xavier Worthy. You've got Juju Smith-Schuster. You got Hollywood Brown. You got a bevy of wide running backs and tight ends. They don't need Jalen Royals to go out there and have 600 yards receiving this year. In fact, I would bet against it. I'd be very curious to see what his over-under is this year in yards. I'm assuming if everybody stays healthy, he's not going to have a vital role to the Chiefs, and that's fine for this upcoming year. He's a 4th-round pick. If your offense is at the point that you're relying on 4th-round wide receivers, something went wrong over the course of the season. Some significant injury happens, or he has just wildly exceeded expectations. But it's a little bit of a crowded room. You take a chance on a player and see if he can grow and he can develop. I don't have many things critical to say about them going to pick up Jalen Royals. All right, let's hear about their running back and why they waited till round 7 to draft one.
So we knew before the draft this was a very deep running back class. There's guys that fell into the 4th round that we thought would be gone at the beginning of 2 and possibly, or beginning of 3 and possibly maybe even 2. So we kind of knew it was deep. We knew Burchard was somebody we liked kind of in the mid rounds, but with it being so deep, there was maybe a chance to get him. What happened was in the 5th, I mean, there was a player in Jeff Bossa who was there, who was clearly the best player on our board. So that would have been a time to take a running back. But when you have a other player that is higher on the board, Brett likes to go by, listen, let's let the board, we've worked on this board for 8 months. Let's let this thing speak to us. So we took the player we had slightly higher and Jeff Bossa. And then it allowed Brett to like refocus and say, okay, I'm going to take a running back now. I know who I want. So we get to the 7th round and, you know, Brett felt like giving up another 7th round pick to move up was well worth it. And I think everybody did to get the kid that we liked in the mid rounds. So that was kind of the thinking there.
I mean, they did answer our question there, Rob. You and I are both looking at when they selected a running back or a linebacker, excuse me, when they selected the linebacker, hey, that makes a lot of sense to draft a running back there. They're telling you, we looked at our board, we thought he was the best player on the board, so we took the best player on the board. I can't argue that logic. Now, did you do that on all of the positions? Because you didn't have a running back as the best player on the board until pick 223 in this year's draft class? There wasn't a time in which the running back was the best player to take. Okay. I just think that you usually can notice that there is a difference in running back. Let's take when they drafted Isaiah Pacheco. Now, I'm not saying that Isaiah Pacheco was a bad pick. In fact, if we go over the last 27th round picks, I'm guessing Isaiah Pacheco in the last 15 years could be the best 7th round pick running back. I mean, Rob, in that same year, in the 5th round, if they had spent a little bit more of a resource, they would have got Tyler Allgeier, who played for the Atlanta Falcons. We agree that Allgeier is a better running back than Isaiah Pacheco. So in the 5th round that year, they could have got a better running back. In the 4th round that year, if they wanted to go running back, they could have got Damian Pierce, who plays for the Houston Texans. In the 3rd round that year, they could have got Brian Robinson, who has been a very good running back for the Commanders. James White was a 2nd round pick that year. Breece Hall was a 2nd round pick. I'm not saying that they made the wrong decision in drafting Isaiah Pacheco. I'm simply pointing out we will be able to do this same thing with this running back selection, and we'll see what that means, if it matters or not. But with where they selected a running back at 228, I'm saying 223, it's 228, where they selected a running back this past year, we are going to be able to look at, there are going to be certain inflection points in the draft where, hey, this would have been a really good spot to go get a running back. And we'll see what the long-term plan is. I still don't think that the long-term plan is very clear for them at running back. And that doesn't appear to be something that they're very worried about. They don't have a running back under contract past this season, and now they have a 7th-round running back. So our conversation about them investing in the position, I'm here to tell you, it ain't over. We will be having these same conversations next year. We're only going to have them for a couple more days, and we got to move on. Like, the running back room is the running back room, and we'll see if they pick up a veteran. We'll see if an injury happens. Like, there's only so much pounding the drum that I can do. That time's over. You had that chance in free agency. You got Elijah Mitchell. You had that chance in the draft. You got Breshad Smith. So they have answered my question on running back. But I'm guessing we're going to look at the 5th round. We're going to look at the 4th round, the 3rd round. Hey, this would have been a really good running back, and this would have given your offense a level that you just don't have. I just simply wanted them to take more of an investment in the position and take a bigger swing. And I want to ask Nate this question, who's coming up next. How does the same organization that 5 years ago spent a 1st-round pick on a running back now just not see running back as important? They don't spend any money on it in free agency. They don't spend any significant draft capital on it. They have gone in the exact opposite of an extreme. They went from having a bad breakup to, I'm never going to date again. Wait, there's other women out there. You don't have to just swear off dating. Date someone else. But they have sworn it off. No, we are not going to spend any more resources on it. We're going to pick up Jerick McKinnon, Elijah Mitchell, and 5th and 6th round picks, and we are going to do that for the rest of Mahomes' career. I mean, so far they won Super Bowls doing it, so maybe I'm the wrong one. Coming up at the top of the hour, Nate Taylor of The Athletic will join us on the show. Keep it right here. So Drive.